The Inside Ellen Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate, Leeds, postcode LS53AP. Check out PR Supplies on Facebook for all your home retail needs. Hello, welcome back to the Inside Elland Road podcast, now available to watch on demand on Shots TV and Freeview Channel 276. I'm your host, Joe Donoghue. Alongside me is YAP Chief Football Writer Graham Smith, and once again, we're here to discuss Leeds United. Farkball has delivered 6 wins out of the last 7. The gap to the automatic promotion places has been cut from 14 points to 8 in the last 2 weeks, and even Leeds players not currently at Elland Road are showing signs of life. It's a great time to be covering the club, supporting the team, and getting along to matches where, I have to say, there's a real convivial atmosphere. Some would say the job of following Leeds United currently has been made so easy, you'd be able to play Football Manager 2024 handheld at half-time. Hey, Graham.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I personally would have my head in the game, you know, thinking about what I'd just seen, thinking about what's to come. So I certainly wouldn't be a fan of that. But I would just like to make a point about the new handheld mobile Football Manager. Do you know that Jan Poveda is proving a tremendous mentor for one of my wonder kids who's a winger, and he's brought on his dribbling ability fantastically well. Sadly, at the same time, the kid's leadership skills have gone down, but I didn't bring him in to be a leader. I brought him in to be, you know, incredible with the ball at his feet. And Jan Poveda might not be playing right now for my team, but he is doing the business as a mentor. So it's interesting, the game. I quite like looking at Leeds a couple of seasons in and seeing who's still there, and seeing who I could maybe pinch. I can't get near Pascal Struijk. You know, I've had a go a couple of times, and they're just, the money that they're asking is absolutely out of this world. Fark is still there, by the way. He's doing a good job in the Premier League. And I think that's about all from my Leeds United updates from Football Manager. But if I think of any more during the show, I'll let you know.
It's interesting that you mentioned you can't get near Pascal Struijk virtually, as well as in real life, because they won't let you near him within 50 feet of the good looking handsome Dutchman as well. But yeah, I mean, we'll get on to some more whimsical stuff in due course. But I think where we have to begin with this week's episode is with the victory over Plymouth Argyle at the weekend, 2-1. Another game in which, you know, at full time, you had a few people who had a couple of gripes about how Leeds hadn't really killed the game and maybe let Plymouth back into it and had a sniff of getting a point. But at the end of the day, it was 3 points. The first half in particular was really professional, ruthless, I think you'd have to say as well. And yeah, the team are really, really purring at the moment.
Yeah, 6 wins out of 7 is really, really good form. That blip against Stoke is all the more annoying now, isn't it? Because it would have been a perfect 7. But yeah, a win's a win. And Daniel Farker was concerned about this game. In fact, I think we talked about it, not on the pod, but I think we mentioned it between ourselves last week. That line from Farke in his press conference about needing the crowd to be absolutely at it. We did talk about it on the podcast, and he could sense that there was a potential sucker punch coming because everything was going too well. All too easy was how he phrased it, because they'd played so well against Leicester. Everybody was, you know, pumping up their tires, saying how good the players were, and it was all deserved stuff, deserved praise. And then he said the training week went so well that in his gut he was thinking, this is going too easy. You know, we could be in for a sucker punch here. Game before an international break, you know, game that you're expected to win, game against an opponent that hasn't played against you, you know, since I was a boy, and hasn't beaten you since I was a very small boy. And yeah, Plymouth, big day out at Elland Road. They'd have been absolutely well up for an upset. So you could just see that there was this little bit of a narrative of what could have happened. So winning the game is the absolute priority. I think it's a slightly different case to the Huddersfield game, where they went 4-0 up and they were home and hosed by halftime. It wasn't like that against Plymouth, but it could have been. And really, it should have been by, you know, 65, 70 minutes, they should have been completely out of sight. But they did the job. And even though they conceded, they didn't really give away many chances after that. Plymouth had a bit of pressure, but they didn't really make Melier work too hard, did they?
No. And I was surprised looking at the end of the game, sort of the XG was around 1.5 for Leeds and 1.4 for Plymouth. And I thought, well, that's a lot closer than I imagined it would be. But I think the vast overwhelming majority of that XG for Plymouth was the goal that they scored, which was across from the right. And, you know, Ben Wayne is not going to miss from a yard out as the ball's coming across. So obviously that's a high value chance. Didn't really create a great deal apart from that. And yes, it was a little bit nervy at Elland Road in those last 15 minutes or so. But can you think of one chance that Plymouth had which made you really think, okay, they're really pushing here? They had the ball, they had the possession, they had the territory, but they didn't really do much with it. And I think that ultimately comes down to the fact that the defence were relatively solid throughout that period.
Yeah, I can think of one moment where Rodon went in and won a big challenge in the area. And had he not done so, there would have been trouble. But beyond that, I'm struggling. And I know Melier made a couple of saves during the game, but at the same time, you know, that spell that Plymouth had, Leeds were still dangerous in that spell. You know, Leeds still had counter-attacks and chances. Nyonto should have scored. Nyonto and Bamford should have combined to score. Routere should have had two, probably, on the day. Jaden Anthony, he had a chance as well from memory. He had a shot that took a nick and went wide. So, yeah, Leeds could have won at a canter. I think more interesting is probably the penalty debate. Should Plymouth have had one?
I mean, I was sympathetic to Stephen Schumacher, the Plymouth coach, after the game, because I do think that, I mean, he was going on about how you could hear the contact. I mean, I'm not sure whether that's true. Because you are quite far away and Elland Road is quite a loud stadium. But, you know, if he says he's heard contact between the two players' boots and Ampadu hasn't got the ball, then, yeah, I think you've got an argument. There's, I don't know, maybe an argument that says that the foul, if there is a foul, begins outside of the box with Ampadu with his hands all over Ballymumba. I mean, at that point in the game, I still don't think that Leeds would have got anything other than a win, even if Plymouth had got a penalty and then scored it. So it's much of a muchness to me. It seems like now a very obsolete argument. But yeah, it's one of those where fortunately the result, the decision went Leeds' way, which, you know, hasn't always been the case in recent memory. So I think it's probably best just to accept it and move on.
Yeah. I imagine he has accepted it by now, but he was quite irked by it in his post-game chat. What were the performances that you particularly enjoyed? Because I thought Joe Rodon, not just for what he did, whip ball and way out ball, but his leadership, like his barking orders, his screaming at fellow defenders, his telling attackers to hold on to the ball or to get the ball, getting the team up the pitch. It was like having two captains at centre back.
Yeah, and there's actually a very, very good series of pictures that were published after the game, which show Liam Cooper pointing to somebody and barking an instruction. And then sort of out of focus in the background, you've got Joe Rodon doing exactly the same, which yeah. I really liked. Nice little bit of symmetry in that, you know, sort of the past and the present and possibly the future, who knows. But yeah, I think Rodon was the standout for me. And in a game where Leeds were, like, the press was on point in attack, the some of the attacking patterns and some of the passing was really, really crisp. I think to say that Rodon was at least my man of the match kind of shows how effective he was. I think I tweeted something at full time with a few sort of headline statistics from him during the game, 10 recoveries or something like that, which, you know, is a good number. Shows his reading of the game was on point. You know, really, really good with his passing. And we both picked it out during the first half. In Pascal Struyck's absence, he was the one, Rodon being, was the one picking those balls, you know, but making those line-breaking passes, similar to, you know, what not in the same vein, but similar to what Ben White did a couple of years ago, you know, just breaking that first initial line of the opposition's formation, you know, disrupting their press and really asking questions. So, yeah, I think it was probably Rodon's best. He's now similar to Glenn Kamara, putting together some really consistent displays back-to-back weeks. And yeah, it's looking like a really, really smart bit of business.
And the most important thing was that Rodon did not ruin our opportunity to run the interview that I conducted with him before the game, a couple of days before the game, because there's always that feeling in the pit of your stomach. You've done an interview that's going to be quite a positive piece, you know, talking about how well things are going. And then if Rodon scores a hat-trick of own goals, you know, the perfect hat-trick of own goals, left foot, right foot, header, and gets sent off, then that interview could never really see the light of day. And it would have been a grand waste of everybody's time. So it was quite nice that he capped off that week, a good week, with a good performance. And now he bounces into the Wales camp, doesn't he, with Ampadu and little Dan James, captain end product himself. And they go into the camp in very good form and a very good mood.
Yeah, they've got two big qualifiers coming up. Obviously, there is the international break, and we've waited at least 10 minutes to complain about that fact. But I know I'll be watching the Wales games with a keen eye, just to see how they get on, because you'd imagine that all three will play. You'd imagine all three will start, considering how important they are and how important they have been to Leeds this season. It's Armenia first and then Turkey, I believe, if they're going to qualify for Euro 2024. I mean, I don't want to be the eternal pessimist, but I think that might be a bridge too far. But hey, I'd like to be proved wrong, because that would be great for the spirits.
How dare you? How dare you cast such doubt on one of the home nations? I don't know.
Just because you met Joe Roden last week and you become best mates.
I don't know. I just think there's a chance. I think there's a chance. You know, ex-Chesterfield man Rob Page at the helm. Isn't it funny, though, that the Welsh FA so recently cast doubt on his position and then were forced into like a grovelling climb down because they won a game and everything turned around and the players were all like, this wasn't very helpful after the game.
It's almost like suits just don't always know what's best.
I was just going to say, it's almost like suits should be seen when there's a cheque to be signed and not heard now and again. Which is something we should talk about later, actually, about Leeds United and the 49ers, and because they did hold Parag Marathi held a meeting with the trust, but it's all been very, very low key. None of it's kind of been conducted publicly. They were asked not to take notes, you know, because it was just a meeting with the fans, that kind of thing. It's almost like they're going to talk when there's something to say, which after the last few years. And some of the tweets and some of the interviews and some of the unfortunate comments that were made by people in high-ranking positions or positions of authority at Leeds, it's maybe a good thing to have just a, you know, a very sober and almost background profile for the new owners.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of background profiles, it was quite telling as I arrived for the game on Saturday that just before the team bus arrived, you know, you do get your autograph hunters and, you know, kids wanting to meet their heroes and that sort of thing, sort of lined up outside the press, media and scouts entrance, which, of course, you'll be familiar with. But if anyone else isn't, it's behind the west stand. I'm right in
Correct.
Thinking that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the team bus sort of comes in there. And before that happened, as I was walking sort of through the crowds, Greta Steinsen, who's obviously the new technical director, was walking, presumably to his car. And I turned around and saw and had a look to see, you know, is anybody going to clock that's Greta? And nobody did. No one cottoned on that was him. And I thought that's very fitting with the way that this whole restructure has gone. Because can you imagine if that was Victor Orta, you know, just going to drop his suit carrier off back into his car before a game, he'd have been mobbed, you know, for good or for bad, depending on the time at which he did it in his Leeds career. But yeah, I thought that was quite, I don't know, maybe that's just the journalist in me looking at things and seeing a deeper meaning. But
you do make a good point. I think Nick Hammond could spend a Saturday afternoon wandering around Elland Road, clipping people's heels, and nobody would be any the wiser as to who he was.
Would he apologize each time? Just go, sorry.
And nobody would have any idea. I honestly think that that most people could not pick him out of a lineup, and yet he's held quite a important position, well, hugely important position at the club, and continues to do so because we've heard absolutely no noise about an exit. Certainly doesn't seem to be any intention to bring the relationship to a close. There is this kind of sense that the top people beyond Farke, well, I don't want to say beyond Farke because I know that Farke sits in a very, very senior capacity at Leeds, and that's why he wanted to be manager. You know, that's why he had essentially control, you would say, over the transfer window and who they got. But the suits at his level or the ones above who've employed him are seen because they're there in the director's box, but they're not making it about them. They're not drawing attention. They're not drawing fire. They're not starting fires. It all feels quite low-key, sensible, quiet.
Yeah, sensible suits. So, I mean, if you don't come up with something better over the next 40 minutes or so, then I think that's that's this week's episode title.
Very good.
I think we should get back to the Plymouth game because it is worth mentioning, you know, just how effective Leeds were. And I touched on the press that was, you know, very, you know, suffocating from the front. And I looked into some of the data this week to sort of reflect that. And thankfully to a Leeds fan who works at Opta, Jamie, he was able to help me with some stats there. And he told me that...
Can I just jump in and make a prediction?
You can, rudely, yes, yeah.
I reckon what you're going to say is something along the lines of, because what I've seen this season would make me think this, that Leeds are probably in the top three in the division for, you know, when a team makes an intervention after a number of passes, I reckon they're only letting teams have something like three passes before they make a defensive intervention. Just what I think, but you carry on.
What's that called? What would you describe that as?
Public displays of affection. What is it? PP. Go on. Tell us all.
PPDA. Passes per defensive action.
And
Graham, would you like to expand on that, on what that means?
That's basically how many passes a team allows the opposition to have before getting a foot in.
Yeah, basically that. And it's like a tackle, an interception, you know, anything that a block, anything that can categorize as a defensive action. Leeds have the third most aggressive in the league. So... it shows that, you know, Leeds are a pressing side when they're out of possession. But when they have the ball, and they do have a lot of it, they're good with it as well. Lots of build-up attacks, lots of direct attacks as well. So versatile is how I describe Farke ball so far. But as well, if you'd like to not rudely interrupt, and bear in mind, I do have the power to mute you, so I will. The number of shot-ending high turnovers, is a little bit of jargon here, but I think I back myself enough to explain it. So a high turnover would be, you know, when you win the ball back in the opposition's half, or the actual term is within 40 meters of the opposition's goal. So basically what Jesse Marsh wanted his team to do all the time was just high turnovers, give the ball away and then win the ball on the edge of the opposition's box. Leeds are doing that more often and then turning that into those possessions into a shot more than any other team in the championship. They're also joint top for turning those high turnovers, you know, retrieving possession in dangerous areas, into goals as well. So they've had 33 shot ending high turnovers, which is, I think, seven more than the next best in the league. And they've scored five times from those, which is joint best with Sunderland and West Brom, which says that, there's been stuff made about whether Joel Pirro is tailor-made for sort of the pressing structure. And, you know, I think one of the things that Daniel Farke said in that lengthy answer about why he's playing Jorginho at 9 and Pirlo in 10 is because Georgie leads the press from the front and he's that type of player, whereas Pirlo isn't. I think those sorts of statistics and numbers prove that Farke knows what he's doing when it comes to, you know, causing problems for opposition teams who might want to try and play out from the back. We saw that twice against Plymouth, didn't we?
Yeah, that's what really impressed me, I think, was that their goals were not just about flair and skill. I saw a suggestion recently from someone who was a bit frustrated with Leeds, suggesting that they were relying too much on, you know, 1v1 skill, individual technical brilliance to get them through. And yeah, I suppose there's an element of you're able to do that when you have players that are better than the opposition, and Leeds do. In most games, their attackers are better than the players they're up against. But the goals they scored against Plymouth came from Glenn Kamara realising that Plymouth were trying to play out or trying to clear, and he closed the player down so quickly that it rushed the clearance straight to the feet of Dan James, and bang, you know, he pinged one in from outside the edge of the area. The second goal, Cree Somerville tracked his man back and backed himself to get a foot in and get the ball, despite kind of giving the defender a head start and being behind him. He caught up with him. He took the ball. He turns, he runs. Pirlo on the overlap, 2-0. It was so effective and such an efficient way. It's almost like that's exactly the point of pressing. You know, that is the exact thing you want to do every time, is to press, win the ball back, and then hurt a team very, very quickly. Which is exactly, I suppose, what Jesse Marsh wanted his team to do. It's just that they weren't particularly capable of doing it. Was it a real thing, or have I just created it in my mind that he said or believed that sometimes it would mean giving the ball away in order to win it back in a better place? Because
that does ring a bell. I can't remember specifically when it was said, because there was a lot that was said. But it does ring a very faint bell in my head, that
because I don't think I'll ever be able to reconcile myself with that as a tactic I'd want to see. Because, well, particularly, I suppose this season particularly, because like we said, Leeds have better players, so you want the ball because you know that you can do something good with it. But I think it feels to me like a modern, you know, tactical jargon way of saying put it in behind and turn them. You know, basically just putting the ball behind the centre backs and forcing them to turn and then try and play out. I just don't like it.
I mean, most teams are capable of playing out from the back nowadays, though, aren't they?
Yeah.
So, when you said it's not a tactical point that you quite like, I knew that, because when you leaned over as I was trying to do some work at half time and you kind of shoving your phone in my face and going, look at this, I could see that you're on your football manager save that give the opposition the ball wasn't one of your tactical instructions. as you were, you know, and I just want to say to anybody listening or watching, I think I'm convinced that Graham plays on easy or like beginner, because you were beating Bayern Munich or something 6-0 with a team who are not Bayern Munich's quality, shall we say.
Well, that was a pre-season friendly, so I don't think they were quite at it. So I think that will explain that. But I have been quite successful in my current save, my save co, you might want to call it, if anyone wants,
very good.
Yeah. Wants a hint as to who I am. Yeah, good performance against Plymouth. And actually, credit to Plymouth as well, because they did try and play and they had some nice moments now and again. They scored themselves a nice goal, very effective. But the result was as it should have been. You know, this is a game that Leeds should have won, and they did so. And now it's all eyes on New York Stadium for the return game, which is as soon as it possibly can be, being on the Friday night. And that's something else we should talk about. You know, Farke's complaint. Does he have grounds for a complaint on a sporting fairness basis?
I mean, it's very Klopp-esque, I think. In the fairest sense, you know, teams do feel shortchanged over the course of a season, you know, and will, you know, it's not just Leeds who are going to be shortchanged by that. Yes, okay, Rotherham don't have many internationals. And three. Leeds. Sorry?
Three.
They have three?
Yeah.
Which are?
Victor Johansson, the keeper.
Your mate.
What did you say?
Your mate.
Yes, yeah. Interviewed him last season. He was great. What's the Northern Irish lad? McGulkin, the attacker.
Do Northern Irish players count as full internationals?
That's enough. And they have a Jamaican lad as well. Dexter, what's his face? You'd think that I hadn't written this in a story yesterday. Mm. Yeah, they only have three who are away, and Leeds have, I think, 18 in all, yeah, including youth internationals.
In all, with sort of the 21s included. But the headline figure is that seven of the players who started against Plymouth are away. And you've got the likes of Jorginho Ruta, who's playing or will likely be playing in a friendly for France under 21s on Monday night, then returning, having effectively a day of recovery, a day to train, and then Rotherham on the Friday. Yeah, it's not ideal, but again, like this is the football calendar.
You know, it is. And also I think a point that I think shouldn't be missed is that Rotherham have no manager because they've just sacked Matty Taylor, another good friend of mine. And they're also Rotherham United going up against Leeds United, and the scale of the resources available to both teams, the ability level of the players in both squads. I can see where Farke is coming from in terms of some of our players won't get to train with us. He's probably a little bit concerned about players going into it a bit tired, you know, at risk of injury because of the travel, because of not having trained with Leeds. And also
he has a very, very strong physiological argument.
Yes, he does, for the rest of the season. But in terms of a sporting fairness, you know, when it comes to Rotherham, I think the deck is still stacked very very favourably for Leeds United, and they should have more than enough to go there and do terrible things to the Millers.
Yeah, I mean, did not think that was going to be the way that you signed off with that bit, but yeah, no, it does. The reason I say that it's a bit Klopp-esque, and that's not, you know, for Leeds fans who listen to this podcast and don't particularly like Liverpool or Jurgen Klopp, that's not me being lazy and thinking, well, it's two German managers complaining about the demands on their players. I think it's more to do with the fact that the fatigue argument, you know, and also the fact that Farke does occasionally say, but he goes into, he makes a complaint and then quickly backs it up with, but we can't complain, and we don't complain about this.
Yeah, this is the reality.
Daniel, actually, gonna have to call you there.
I'm gonna start using that in and around the house. You know, whenever I see something that's not quite to my liking or a chore that hasn't been done, I'm gonna complain, and then I'm gonna say, but this is the reality. You know, I have to deal with this. We don't complain about this. You know, we deal with it.
We are the Smith family. Yes.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else from his press conference that jumped out. He was asked about Ruta again, and he made the point again, you know, if he was the finished article, you know, prolific as well as uber creative, then it would, you know, well, he wouldn't be, essentially. He certainly wouldn't be playing for Leeds United in the Championship if that were the case. Will a week or a week and a bit with Thierry Henry make him materially better at finishing? Possibly not, but it would be nice if Thierry Henry could show him a trick or two, you know, or even just share some of his mentality. I think even just spending time around Thierry Henry, for someone like Ruter, young, loves football, very bubbly, I imagine it'll be quite exciting for him. So he might just come back in even finer fettle than he's been in recently. And I think he's young enough to cope with the demands in terms of travel and demands in terms of the physical aspect. He certainly hasn't looked, I don't recall too many times when he's looked leggy this season. You know, he gallops around the pitch. He puts in an enormous shift. There was that great passage of play, wasn't there, on Saturday, where he had the ball down by the corner flag again, and he held it up and he held it up and he passed it off and he got it back and he did a flick. And yeah, he's looked strong in the latter stages of games, and particularly as teams have tired, he's looked more dangerous on the counter. So I think he'll likely be fine for Rotherham unless he picks up a knock.
Don't say it.
It would be absolutely superb if he came back and scored exactly the kind of goal that Thierry Henry was famed for scoring, because then we could all say, there it is, the Thierry Henry effect. And then Farke will have to very quickly crush that under his heel, because he is the manager who's had the biggest impact on Jorginho Rutera this season.
I did like Farke's response to the question, which suggested that working with Henry could potentially improve him. And he basically just unpacked it and completely unpicked it and went, well, it's 10 days. Like, is he going to materially improve in 10 days?
He's going to completely,
which is exactly how I'd program that question.
He's going to unprogram Rutera and put him back together entirely in 10 days. He also dealt quite brusquely with my question about Sam Byram popping up in the number 10 position, because it is a feature of Farke's style that his left back will suddenly appear centrally. Byram makes a lot of really good runs, cutting in from the left, makes, you know, diagonal runs towards the middle of the box to make himself an option for passes or to try and join in with an attack. And he set up Somerville, who's just offside, goal disallowed. The right back as well, we've seen playing, when Ayling's played, he's been playing like a second winger. And Archie Gray, when he was in centre midfield, dropping into the right back position to get the ball from the back and help them play out. These things are all, I suppose that by now, they're not unexpected positions. And Farke's point was, well, this is expected because this is my plan and it's what I've told him to do. And positional kind of rotations are important. I wonder if he's got any up his sleeve that we haven't yet seen, you know, based on a player's profile, that maybe a player that he hasn't used quite yet. I wonder if he's got any surprises up his sleeve.
What, like he's going to turn Jan Poveda into a centre-half?
Jan Poveda popping up at centre-half.
that would be brilliant, wouldn't it? I mean, Lisandro Martinez isn't the tallest at Man United, is he? But I think Poveda might be a bit of a stretch.
Well, Berardi wasn't the tallest, but Bielsa used to have Berardi marking either the first or second best header of the ball in the opposition because he had such a springy leap on him. So
I mean, there is that, and also the fact that Berardi, I'm convinced, was raised by wolves in the Alps. So, you know, he does have that dog in him, so to speak.
Yeah. I think he might have raised himself in the Alps. I'm not sure anyone helped, at least of all creatures like that. Yeah, be interesting to see how things evolve with Farke and Leeds this season tactically, because I think by now we've seen his style. You know, he said from the outset he didn't need to convince anybody at Leeds of his style at the interview stage because they know how he plays football. But as Leeds get better, as Spence perhaps comes back in, you know, how that will impact things and will it change the way they play? And once Struyck gets back in as well, you know, if we ever reach a point where Leeds are at full strength on what you'd call their strongest on paper team, you know, how exactly they'll play and who will be the most influential players in that.
Just thinking about Spence coming back, and he should be back in team training, to use a Farkism, by next week, I think. He said 7 to 14 days last week, didn't he? So you'd expect him to be back second week of the international break. Maybe probably an outside bet for this squad for Rotherham, probably too soon for that. But certainly in the fixtures to come, I think that the type of player that Spence is and the pedigree and the track record that he has in the Championship, once he gets up to full speed, it could be the Leif Davis of this Leeds team, but sort of inverse, you know, on the right instead of the left. Because Leif Davis at the moment has created the most chances of any player in the Championship this season for Ipswich. And that could be the area that Spence, or rather the function or the role that Spence fulfills for Leeds, you know, being a real chance creation person on that flank. You're looking at me really puzzled. Have you gone off the screen, or are you looking at a different tab?
No, I was just wondering what makes him. Is it his passing? Is it his crossing, Spence? Like, I know he's quick.
It's his dribbling. It's his ball carrying.
It's his dribbling.
I think he gets the way that he gets into the final third with his ball carrying is unlike many other players at this level.
I do enjoy a player who can dribble.
Which is why we like Jorginho and Somerville, right?
Exactly. And they're both very different, those two, in the way that they dribble as well. You don't remember Cree using too many stepovers and too many roulettes and things like that, but he's just so quick, and he's a quick jinky winger, isn't he? Like he goes in and out, he goes left and right, goes to either side, and he shifts very, very quickly. Whereas Routier has kind of got that. You just have no idea what he's going to do with the ball. And also he's a brute. So he uses his strength a lot in his dribbling.
He's more languid, isn't he, Routier?
Yeah.
Somerville's more like he's on rails, or like the bunny at the Greyhound tracks that just no one can catch. Or the hare.
Yes.
The bunny.
Spence more like Routier in his dribbling style, would you say?
I'd probably say he's, because he's a fullback, he's probably more up and down. So he's probably, you know, goes back and forth, a straight line runner. But I do think that he has the capacity to maybe move infield a little bit, you know, whereas you look at the way that Cody Drama used to dribble, for example, when he did dribble, and that was very sort of, he was a sort of a vertical type player. He was, you know, back and forth, didn't really cut inside too much, but he was able to get up and down. I think Spence has the capacity to maybe cut inside, drop of the shoulder a little bit. I'm basing that off some watching of Middlesbrough at the start of the season and, you know, when he was actually there. So I could be talking absolute rubbish.
Let's hope so. Let's let's talk about the second coming of Junior Firpo, or the potential second coming of Junior Firpo, because it feels like there's an opportunity here for him. He's not gonna rewrite history, and he's not gonna change everyone's minds about him. But he could be quite an important player, and it's serendipitous, isn't it, that he's come back literally as Sam Byram has got injured. So there's like a handing over of the baton for however many games it will be, maybe one, maybe two, maybe another one. Byram's injury, Leeds were very, very quick to tell us after the game, was not linked to his previous surgeries. It's not a recurrence of that. It's a normal hamstring strain.
Great. So it's just a new part of him that's broken.
But broken in a way that should easily mend itself, I think, was...
Like foreshores.
So while Byram's out, I mean, I'm surmising that Firpo will be fit enough to play from the start. Although Farke did say, didn't he, that he played more minutes than he would have liked against Plymouth. Mm-hmm. You know, 2 weeks on, will he be able to start? Or do you think Shackleton, once he's got his little glute fixed, do you think Shackleton comes in at left back?
I think he could probably start Firpo, even if he plays 60 minutes and then brings Shacks on for the last half an hour. He will have, you know, I mean, they've got a few days off now, haven't they, at the beginning of this first week of the international break. But when they get back into training, they'll be, I mean, Firpo's one of the few that is remaining. So I liken it to a classroom at school where you've got fewer students in the classroom. They get more attention by the teacher. You know, if it's a class of 10 rather than a class of 30.
Yeah. Still spends most of his time telling off, Poveda, people like that.
Can you pick up yellow cards in classrooms? I think junior would be
it's not a yellow card. It's a timeout, isn't it? Or a consequence. I think it's what's it
name written on the board.
Yeah, name written on the board. Don't make me do it, Junior. Don't make me put your name up here. You'll be inside during break. He's an interesting one, Junior Firpo. I thought he'd go. I thought he should have gone in the summer. That was my prediction and how I felt that, you know, it had just run its course and it hadn't really worked out. But you never know. He might play a big part in this promotion. Very, very attacking player, not as defensively sound as Byram. Byram, to his credit, has been really good at both sides of the game. So any absence for him is a bit of a blow for Leeds. But this is where your squad depth comes in, isn't it? And it's tested. So let's see how Firpo does.
Yeah, it's an area which Leeds haven't really had squad depth in recent seasons. So it's nice to have it. And I'm not going to complain about it. I think he was absolutely fine coming on against Plymouth. I think in the aftermath of the game, I remember thinking, I was having a chat with one of my mates. He was saying he was at the game, so he hadn't seen a replay yet. He was asking who was at fault for the Ben Wayne goal. And out of instinct, because of where the cross came from, I said Firpo, and then we sort of assessed it afterwards and looked at the clip and said, well, actually, no, Firpo's man, he actually has tracked. And it's, I think, just Cooper's a little bit flat-footed in getting to the byline, which allows the cross to come in. And as a result, Rodon's had to shuffle over and so forth. But yeah, consider this my apology to Junior Firpo for thinking that he was at fault for that.
I think we've reached peak Donoghue, where in a football discussion with a mate, you've not simply just given an opinion and, yeah, I agree, and then moved on to talk about, you know, pints or whatever else. You've actually gone and tactically analysed the scene. Shall we watch it? Shall we watch it together?
Didn't actually get the clip up. It wasn't me.
This is the company you keep, though, Joe. This is peak Donoghue. I think I would consider the Plymouth game well and truly dealt with now. I don't think there's anything else that we can possibly pluck from it. It wasn't really anything funny that happened particularly.
There was the South Stand picking on the sartorial desires of one of the Plymouth fans.
Yeah, the guy getting nailed for his chinos.
Yeah, I hope anyone from the South Stand is pleased with themselves who's listening right now, because Graham went home straight away and was burning all of his lower half clothing, because that's all he wears. He's a big chino man.
I'm a big Dickies man, and I always have been, and I'm not going to change just because the South Stand have absolutely destroyed someone through a series of chants over a period of around 25 minutes. It says a little bit about the second half as well, that it wasn't quite as high octane, or that the jeopardy wasn't quite there, because the South Stand were able to devote so much attention and time to a man wearing chinos. Maybe also speaks to how much they trust this team now and how they felt the game was in control, that they felt they could let their attention wander.
I did think this. There was on a number of occasions, there were a lot of people in the South Stand in that corner next to the away fans who were just looking over at the away section. I was thinking, lads, there's a game going on here.
Like, yeah, but look at that guy's trousers.
there is a game happening here, which you've paid a pretty penny to come and see. But no, I mean, I do think that's, again, you being a journalist and looking at the deeper meaning behind someone taking the mickey out of someone's trousers and what it means for the wider, the wider context of how well Leeds are doing this season.
No, I think it speaks directly to the level of trust in Daniel Farke has imbued in the fan base. Somebody tweeted it the other day about how normal this all feels and how it feels normal for Leeds to win, like turning up expecting Leeds to win. You know, that hasn't been said for quite a long time. You know, even in the fantastic first season of the Premier League under Bielsa, you didn't go into games thinking they're going to beat Spurs today. You went in thinking, you know, they've got a chance of nicking a result, but you didn't expect them to win. Whereas now, I know they've dropped down a division, but you turn up against almost anyone and you think, yeah, Leeds have more than enough to win this. And there is a level of expectation now.
I think as well, you look at the Championship, you look at the Football League, compared to my sort of first watching of the Championship, you know, like 15 years ago or so, whatever it was, I feel as though the teams that are coming to Elland Road now, a lot more professional, a lot more advanced, definitely higher in quality in terms of the players and the sports science, nutrition, all that sort of thing. All those little marginal gains will also contribute to the fact that you can't be complacent. I think it's fair to reflect as well that, yes, while there will have been some people coming to Elland Road last Saturday who were expecting a win, there were also fans who were coming there who were expecting a defeat because of just the pessimism condition that all Leeds fans appear to have. We've won 5 out of 6, we beat top of the league 1-0 away from home, clean sheet, Plymouth, poor record away from home, long journey, lead to that. But no, they didn't. They won.
Was just trying to work out why you'd have suddenly wanted to watch the championship 15 years ago. I don't remember South Shields being in the championship 15 years ago, but there we go.
Interesting, yeah. Very interesting. We should also discuss that there was a bit of a reshuffle in sort of the coaching setup at Leeds this week. Michael Scubala, the under-21s head coach, has left to join Lincoln City as their new boss in League One, which is no doubt a great opportunity for him. He's well-liked. He's a popular figure at Thorpe Arch. Very calmly spoken, very understated, but very much knows his stuff. And, you know, Lincoln are not the first EFL club to have, you know, had an interest in Scubala since he took over with Leeds 21s at the beginning of last season. I mean, Leeds have said, didn't they, in the statement they released, that they're disappointed to lose him, but are also quite proud of the fact that another coach who's worked in the academy at Thorpe Arch has gone on to a senior managerial role or coaching role in the EFL. And I think as well, he lands at a good club with a good track record of developing players and developing coaches as well.
Yeah, Appleton was there for quite a while, wasn't he? And
The Cowley brothers were as well, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. And they've gone on to championship, work in the championship, haven't they, since? So was it with Lincoln that the Cowley brothers beat Burnley? And it was Burnley when Joey Barton was there. I'm sure they did. Because they had the big lummox up top. An opportunity too good to miss, I think, for Scubala, you know, for somebody who has ambitions to, and I think he talked about wanting to be a manager in his own right when he was caretaker of Leeds United, when he was, I think it was post-Man United away, when he got that draw. And also, when somebody messaged me last night to say they thought he'd always be with them, or he thought he'd always stay or something, I had the kind of reaction, well, the 21's job is not what it was at Leeds. Mm-hmm. It's not the same, because the 21's feels very, very separate to the senior setup. Yes, there are young players who will, like Matteo Joseph and JB, who are kind of on the fringe of the first team, but getting minutes with the 21's. But there isn't the same kind of, have we seen any senior players getting minutes in the 21's? There doesn't seem to be the same. They were almost one squad, weren't they? Like under Bielsa, they were almost one squad, and that had carried on. And
I suppose that was partly because of the fact that the squad was so small, though.
Yeah, and yes, you know, he used them now and again, almost like mannequins. But there was a huge amount of involvement at senior level for youngsters, and I think it's a little more separate now. It certainly feels like the academy is very separate to the senior setup, and that's how Farke wants it. So I could kind of understand if the job maybe had lost a little bit of its allure, if Scubala has, you know, and we know he has ambitions to work at a senior level. So I can't say I'm overly surprised. I think my big surprise is that he hasn't taken you as one of his assistants.
No, I'd definitely be rejecting that. Can't be letting down the listeners, can I? I'm not sure how good.
You see yourself at a higher level. That's what it is.
Look, I mean, all I'm going to say is if Scubala remains at Lincoln and they are in need of a director of football, then, you know, I'd need a very trusted team below me, but because it is all about the team. But, you know, if that role becomes available, then look, I'm not going to rule anything out.
very good.
But I mean, Lincoln do have a track record. Again, this is going Pete Donahue, as you'll probably call it. But Lincoln do have a good track record with developing youngsters who've been out on loan, or rather, who've come in on loan to Sinsel Bank. Brennan Johnson was there a couple of years ago. Yeah. Did really well. I think it was the same year as Morgan Rogers, who was a Man City player. Don't think he's kicked on as much, but he had a really good season there. Yeah, there's been a couple, and it opens the door for the possibility in January after Scubala's, you'd like to think, over the next month and a half, assess the squad, seeing if there are any holes, any roles or functions which he feels would need filled by some of the young lads at Leeds, some of the better ones who could come in there. Because you'd have to say there are a few in the 21s now who you think are kind of maybe pushing for that senior involvement, but are simply never going to get into a team that are challenging for promotion back to the Premier League, because, you know, no manager in their right mind is going to take that risk.
No. And I think Skubala would be well advised to be selective if he was going to go down that approach, because League One is a tough league, a very tough league, and it's really difficult to make the step from 21s to the senior level at any level. I mean, I've seen it. I remember David Faupala coming from Man City to Chesterfield on loan and just wasn't at it. You know, he wasn't at the level. Rhys Mitchell, who came from Chelsea, rejected a contract at Chelsea to join Chesterfield, couldn't get in the team in League One, League Two, and then ended up, I think, in the southern equivalent of the Northern Premier. It's a brutal step to take, but you'd like to maybe see someone like Sean McGurk having a go in senior football to see if that little bit of magic that he adds now and again for the 21s could be applied at senior level.
Well, you look at Lewis Bate as well. You know, there was interest from Fleetwood at the end of the summer transfer window, but I think that was all a bit too rushed. He was on loan at Oxford last season, played pretty prominently. I mean, I know Sonny Perkins is out on loan at Oxford currently, but, you know, there's the potential that get him recalled, send him back on loan with Scoobs and see if that's a better environment for him. Matteo Joseph, Skubala handed him the captaincy of the 21s, which, you know, obviously speaks to how highly he rates him. And then you got Darko Jabi as well, who also had EFL interest last January and this summer as well as that link to Valenciennes in France, wasn't it?
Well, it's what Jackson did when he went to MK Dons. You know, he brought Max Dean.
Yeah.
Basically just bundled Max Dean into the car as he was leaving Thorpe Arch, and then rang the club to say, I've got him. He's coming with me on loan. If you sign the papers, then you'll see him again alive otherwise. And now look, Max Dean scoring goals for fun. Is he six in seven, something like that, which is a fantastic return at any level. But to be doing that in the EFL is really, really good, because Max Dean is a player that is very easy to like because he's so angry. And his anger is a comical anger. Like, he is a horrible little wasp who will irritate the life out of central defenders and humans much bigger than him. So to be scoring goals as well as being angry, that's a really, really good combination for a striker in the EFL. And it's also, I think we talked about this many episodes ago, but it stands you in good stead as an academy if players are making careers, not necessarily at your club, at your level, but players are making careers at a good level after being in your academy. You know, if they're playing in League One or even League Two, lower end of the Championship, and they're doing the business, then you can use that as part of your sell for bringing in players.
Oliver Casey signed a new contract, didn't he, at Blackpool?
Yeah,
an extended contract. Yeah. After he went on loan to Forest Green, he obviously had to cut his teeth somewhere else and come back to Blackpool and done well.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think the sign of a good academy is not how many players come through directly into the first team of that academy, but go on to have good careers, as you say. Yeah.
Yeah. That brings us neatly onto the departure, doesn't it? Finlay Gorman.
Well, it does. I mean, I'd like to, first of all, just reassure the listeners that it might actually, Max Dean's improved form in front of goal might actually be to do with the fact that MK Dons now have an ex-Gateshead manager, not an ex-South Shields manager, nothing like that. You know, Gateshead manager, ex-Gateshead boss Mike Williamson, who's in there now, who seems to really trust him, and by all accounts is actually quite a good coach. But yes, sorry.
Finlay Gorman, centre half, wasn't he?
He was a big centre half, and he did have the turning circle of a ferry, as far as I can remember. But as a coach, can't fault him.
Very good. Can you fault the decision of Finlay Gorman and his camp, his family, advisors, whatever you want to call them, for saying yes to Manchester City? Because it's all very well I mean, I could sit here and say, well, he's not going to play, and his best chance of playing soonest would have been to stay with Leeds United. But I can also say that if Manchester City came and said that one of my kids was the best at his age group and we really, really wanted him, and, you know, look at this fantastic house in a leafy suburb near Manchester, you know, would I be able to turn that down? I don't know. I'm also not suggesting, of course, that they paid for a house for his family, but I'm just imagining a scenario, just imagining a scenario where they would buy me a house, because that's how I'd like it to play out. I don't even know if that's within the FA regulations. But however they've done it, they have convinced them that this is the right move for him. It'll be an interesting one to watch, won't it?
Yeah, it will be. And it'll still be a number of years until he's on the radar of mainstream football because of how young he is. Yes, he's playing above his age group at the moment, but there's a lot of hurdles that'll be in his way between now and then. But I sympathise with Leeds fans who are maybe disappointed, because you never want to lose your best academy prospects. But unfortunately, this is just what happens. You know, these big clubs have the resources in abundance to be able to blow mid-level Category 1 academies like Leeds out of the water completely. There's another example. There's a player currently at the Under-17 World Cup with England, Ishir Samuel Smith, I think 16 or 17. And Chelsea signed him in the summer from Everton for about £4 million. It's like, that's almost as much as what Leeds paid for Glenn Kamara. And this lad probably won't play a senior game for another couple of years. You know, that's the sort of thing that Man City are doing as well, because they have the resource to do so. And that's without getting into the fact that a move like this probably sets up the Gorman family for life.
Well, you'd hope so.
Well, you'd imagine so. And it's an attractive prospect. It's not like, you know, he's moving. It's not like it's a sidestep. Man City's academy is ultimately one of the best in the world. And in the next 5 to 10 years, it will have produced an unholy amount of players who are going to be playing at championship level and above, and many other leagues across Europe. So it's an occupational hazard of having probably one of the brightest prospects in Thorpe Arch's recent history playing well for Leeds and playing well for England as well. Ultimately, you've got scouts who will be employed by Manchester City who will watch that and think, well, if I don't get him and Chelsea do or Arsenal do or Liverpool or someone else, then my head's on the chopping block, because we're Man City. We have the resource to be able to go and do this. So there's no excuse. So yeah, I'm sympathetic, but it's a very much a what can you do sort of scenario, and definitely not one to be getting sort of bitter over.
Yeah, they reckon that now you're never more than 3 meters away from a Chelsea or Manchester City youngster, no matter where you are.
It's true.
Within 5 or 6 years, they reckon every other player in the EFL will be on loan from Manchester City or Chelsea. So that's the way the game's going. Stockpiling,
they're not allowed to do that anymore. Famously, we both know very well about the loan regulations because of this summer. So
Yes, of course. Ah, yes.
It's going to be 6 outgoing loan players internationally next summer. 6, down from 7 this year. Leeds
be great if they brought it. They're just going to bring it down and down and down until you just have to have your players around the place. And then Chelsea will need 7 dressing rooms to fit them all in.
Potentially. Look, I'm not an architect, so I don't know what the sort of the blueprints are down at Cobham. I can go and check it out for you if you want, but I'm...
Yeah, do a piece on that.
And before we finish then, this week, we did receive quite an interesting message on the back of last week's sizzle reel, which if any of you have been watching on Twitter, just clip together a few little bits and pieces from the week's episode, a few quips of Graham's, a few of mine. And we see what comes of that. And we did receive... How would you put it? What would you describe that as? The new nickname that first of all I was given.
Is this the one that made me laugh for probably 60 minutes?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Obviously, we can't repeat it word for word because there are some expletives in there. And again, because, you know, oh, wait, actually, I think it's been deleted.
Oh.
Because I've just got to click on it. And while the on WhatsApp, the little, I don't know, thumbnail is still there, but then I click into the actual tweet and it's this page does not exist. Well, so what do you think we should do? Should we repeat it? Or
no, I think what we'll do is we'll chalk that one up to the devil's juice and the time of night that it was as well, and say that it was against better judgment. But it did make me laugh that someone wanted to paint you in such a young, innocent I don't know of another word to use, because we do like to try and keep it relatively family friendly. But yeah, it's a shame actually that we can't go delve slightly deeper into that one, because it was very, very funny.
Well, I'm actually tempted to use everything that is family friendly still in the tweet, and it was along the lines of at me and then at you, so you know, really, really trying to get both of us. Why do you two sound so bleep robotic? great. Honestly, I'd rather run bleep body part over razor blades than listen to you two, Graham, and there was the new nickname for me. So
the Virgin.
Oh, the Virgin. Okay, there you go. Yeah,
the Virgin Joe, as you'll now be known. yeah, I think my favorite bit of the tweet was that we were trying too hard, when yes. in actual fact, we're not even trying at all. That's the joke. Yeah.
I actually have sort of on the notepad next to me a column for clips, just to clip up things. Where I'll make a little timestamp. This is really going behind the scenes, isn't it? Listeners really getting an insight here.
Drawing back the curtain into the machinations of the Inside Elland Road podcast. Mm. It's I've a shame we don't have any...
I wasn't finished.
Hey. Oh, sorry. Your turn.
I've got a column for clips and I've got a column for cuts. And the cuts column for 3 weeks in a row now has been completely empty, because we've just been able to... We've just been riffing off each other.
Because we're now so robotic that
exactly.
each of us has hardwired into us what to say and what not to say.
It's like a well-oiled German Fark machine.
It's a shame that we don't have any score lines to predict, because I think you got pretty close, didn't you? You almost said 2-1 last week, and then you changed it to 2-0. You fool. But I said 3-0, so neither of us got there. So we don't have a lead score to predict. Is there a prediction we could go head-to-head on in an international capacity?
Well, do you think Wales will qualify for the Euros?
I'm going to say yes.
Okay, well, I'm going to say no.
Okay, and there we have it.
There's maybe it's a little bit of a bee in my bonnet, considering that the account of the person who gave me my new nickname appears to be Welsh. So, you know.
And here begins a lifelong grudge.
No, of course not. I'm remaining ultimately professional. But yeah, any parting remarks then, Graham, before we close out this week's episode?
No. No, just enjoy your international break, everyone, as much as you can. And here's to a few Leeds United goals or goal contributions in international games. So we've got something to witter on about next week, and then we'll see you at Rotherham.
Absolutely. See you at Rotherham. That's as grim a parting message as any. Right, this has been the Inside Elland Road podcast with myself, Joe, and YP, Chief Football Writer, Graham. Bye for now.
The Inside Elland Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate in Leeds. PR Supplies, everything for the home.